Those higher up beyond were enveloped in an aura gossamer-like, their bodies radiant with their beauty of form and substance, each suggestive of a stately poem or tender song of love and aspiration, each a god in grace and equipoise, each, with his peers, perfectly displayed before us. You would say, in earth words, they were very distant from us. In truth they were, yet we saw them whole and in detail, both of form and garment, if garment be any name by which to call that radiance which enveloped them. But these were intermediate nevertheless. There were other myriads beyond the limit of our vision. This we knew, but saw them not at all, they were too sublimate for us of our estate to see them. And atop of all we knew there stood the Christ. If these be all so lovely, we said one to another as we gazed, what then must he be like in his native glory? Here we stuck, we could not go farther, so left the matter there. For we knew he would come to marshal us. And when he came he would assume visibility for the sake of us, conditioning himself to the capacity of the indwellers of the descending spheres, as he passed by on his progress earthward. For it was made known to us that he who was above them all would press through and downward until he stood within the firmament of earth to lead the charge. Yes, my son, never was such leader as he. Among the gods and principalities there cannot be his peer in leadership both of angels and of men. Too I say this solemnly, for those heavenly powers and princes be not cut to pattern, you shall know, but, as with you of earth, so here, each expresses a personality of his own. This do we, the angels, so do those above us in degree of holiness, so do those of still higher rank, and so do the greatest express each the excellencies of the Father in his own free personality. So I say it, that, in respect of leadership, the Christ is peerless among them all, I think, and those my comrades with whom I was there at speech said even as I said. But we will speak of this again to you, and you shall then say if we seem to have judged correctly or not. Arnold. And next headline is The Approach of the Christ, the Advance Guard. Friday, March 7, 1919. We waited expectantly, gazing aloft at the layers of the heavens as they stretched away beyond and above us. That they lay like a gigantic carpet of silk unrolled and falling, all flounced and pleated, like a cascade of waters prismatic in the heavenly sunlight. Each pleat was a heaven, each flounce a borderland joining two and blending their dominant colors into one. It swept down from the heights in glittering waves, their hues scintillating in the celestial radiance like jewels on a kingly cloak, each crystal atom an angel of power who, as he moved, caught and reflected some new beauty of those heavenly rays. Then, as we watched, the farthest line within our vision slowly began to change in its coloring. The normal hue was there, but suffused by another ingredient, a new brightness. And we knew that the Christ and his retinue had come within the limits of our vision. Very beautiful it was to see, as one after another of those silken pleatings seemed to fall over and tilt the lap beneath till it fell over too and kissed the third, which likewise bent its head and laid its cheek caressingly upon the shoulder of its kin below. This was the aspect as we viewed the coming of the Christ in the distance, as he descended, step by step, towards us, ever nearer and yet vast intervals away above there, just emerged from that impenetrable light and throwing forward over the spheres the influence of his presence as he descended towards our own. At length the light waves which went before him began to ripple upon the outer boundary of a region but a few spheres away, and then we could note what was coming in some more detail. We began to see his wide-flung foreguard as they advanced and threw their beams before them as they came. But him we saw not yet. Then, after long ecstasy of wonderment and great uplifting at the sight of so much power and glory, we began to feel within us a glow which suffused us with a sense of love and pity and a strengthened resolve to put of our best into what work lay ahead of us. So we knew that he drew near in person. But I cannot tell you how he came, or when he passed onward, below us, my son. It was all too glorious. I will give you what I am able. That glow increased until we felt so strong and able that we stood each erect and craned our necks to see his coming. First came the retinue which went before him to prepare us. For he came now not as I have explained to you some time previously. In his great glory and native strength he came this time to enable 10,000 battalions of his chosen for this great enterprise. So it was necessary that we absorb of his strength to our utmost, and for this we must also be gradually attuned. So they came and, as they passed over us and through our ranks, one gave a word of wisdom, another his blessing, another a kiss of peacefulness, as each of us needed. They went among us leisurely, those strong ones, and singled us out and in a trice had scanned our lack and had supplied it and passed on. Those who went above us directed them where need was. All worked together in a harmony of business which in itself was no mean lesson to us. What happened to yourself, Arnal? There were women with them, as there were with us. You also send women to the wars of earth, my son. We brought with us women to the rescue in their proper spheres of service. I stood there away from my fellows, for there had been gathered together a number by one of those who came in order that he might speak to them. And as I stood so there came to me a man and a woman. They smiled and took each of them a hand of mine. The man was of greater stature than I and the woman but little less than he. A comely and most stately pair, but very simple in their humility and love, as all those great ones be. Then he put his other hand upon my shoulder, and he said, Arnal, you are not unknown to us, who work together for the most part, combining our native qualities for the work we have in hand from time to time. So we sought you out together on our way through this your home. The lady my companion has, I think, something to say to you before we pass onward. She has kept it within her this some time past awaiting an opportunity. Now the woman was very beautiful, her radiance, joined with that of him, abashed me, and I could do nothing better than gaze down in silence. And while I did so I saw her grip tighten on my hand as she raised it a little. Then down before my lowered eyes came the crown of her beautiful head as she stooped to kiss my hand. For a little time her lips remained there and I looked upon her silken brown gold hair, where a gold band crossed it where it parted and fell away each side. I could not speak, for the touch of them overcame me with a joy uplifting and so exquisite in its holiness that I cannot put it into words. And then I raised my eyes to his, questioning him in my perplexity and, as she slowly lifted her head and looked at my face, he said, She is grandmother, my friend Arnal, to the girl Mirimi. I looked from him to her then and she smiled and said, I thank you, Arnal, for you did for me what I was not able to do, being too far removed. But, seeing the plight of the girl, I sent to you my longing, and you readily responded to my wish. I thank you as she also soon shall come to thank you herself. Then she kissed me upon my brow, gently impressing me toward her, and they went upon their way, smiling upon me as they left me, so that I felt I should always be in touch with them thereafter, and never far away. It is so here. You are wondering who is this Mirimi of whom he spoke. So did I wonder, although I knew her well. As I was going about my business not long ago I, as you perhaps have done, stood still of a sudden, feeling that someone wished my attention. Well, as I stood there passive, there came to me no voice, but an impulse which forthwith I obeyed. I made haste to descend to the earth plane and, by some external influence, was led straight to a young woman who was about to pass over into the spirit life. At first I scarcely knew what my duty was. Only I knew it lay there. But I soon made it out. Waiting for her passing there stood near me a man. He had been her destruction on earth and was awaiting her now to claim her and drag her away with him into his wickedness. So, to be short, I met her when she came through, warded him off with much effort, and bore her to a place of safety where he could not reach her in sphere 3. She is now 2 spheres advanced, and I have guarded and tended her all the way. She is one of my charges. So there you have it. And now it was a great joy to me, both to know from whence came that first request, and also to know I had served the sender of it to her approval. Such joy you cannot understand while you are still of the earth, my son. Yet he explained it when he told the story of the almoners and the greeting awaiting such as were trustworthy in their duties. Well done, good and faithful, and to you and to my joy with me. So did I then, my son, I had not lacked in that little service. And now I entered with the greater joy upon this present and larger enterprise. for I knew that her words were such as he himself would have spoken to me. And his great joy is ever the joy of service. Arnal. And next headline is The Herald. Monday, March 10, 1919. Now you shall know that these transactions extended over many years in your earth time. Meanwhile we went about our business. When a reforming of a community of earth is proceeding, people still do their daily work. And so did we. Only the one great and dominating thought which permeated all our doings, and tinctured any scheme of service we chanced to have on hand, was the coming of the Christ and the conditioning of the spheres above us as he came. This we could see as we went our ways here or there, and at times we assembled to note more carefully the changing splendor of his progress. Such times we mostly came at call when some herald would enter our sphere and, standing sometimes upon a mountain peak, or in mid-heaven suspended, would proclaim the assembly. Then those of us who were so called would go to the place of meeting and await what should happen. Such an occasion was that which I narrated to you at my last coming. But at other times we pursued our ordinary work, or were especially trained for future service with our prince when he should call us, or were sent on special missions into other spheres. But in this last case a more perfect line of communication was maintained than ordinarily, so that we might be notified if a sudden call should be made on our attendance. Yet, although many things were done at this time which would be of interest to you and helpful, I will pass by these presently, and, if it should be so ordained, at some future time I will return to them. It is my purpose now to tell you of the coming of the Christ himself. We came together, we who were elected to follow him, and gathered within the park lands where stood the Tower of the Angels. As we waited we looked up to the palm crown on top. Gradually there emerged into visibility, one after other, many angels. They were kneeling, sitting, standing, reclining among the lace work. They did not move into their positions from within the crown. They became visible before our eyes. They were first there unseen, and then took on their outward shape where they were. Having done this they did not remain still, but moved about from one place to another conversing. These were of high degree and very beautiful. I have already related a similar incident to you. I do not think many of these were the same who came then. Some of them were. When they were all set, another form was seen to be taking shape. In this way, there appeared a new item in the crown, a cross rising from the center of it and above it. The last angel to come stood on one arm of the cross and rested his left hand against the upper portion. He was more resplendent than any of them. When he had fully taken on the condition of our sphere, he raised his right hand, looking down on us the while, and gave us his benediction. Then he spoke to us in a clear bell-like voice, not loud in tone, but still reaching us way down below and all who stood within those precincts. They were scattered far and wide about the meadows and hills, and some upon the roofs or in the boats upon the waters. So he made his proclamation and he said, "We have called you, my comrades, that you should hear the message of him who draws near this state in order that at his arrival and his passing you understand what those should be to you and lose no blessing. Know you, therefore, you have seen him many times that now he comes in another guise. As you have seen him previously, he came for some one purpose or another, in special phase of person, as special need required. Now he comes, not in his fullness truly, yet in much greater fullness of majesty than previously he came. For then he descended to you upon his business peculiar. Now he comes with the mandate of his further to the work. It is an enterprise of great significance, for earth is in dire need of your help. When therefore he passes by you, do you, each and every one of you, ask him what qualities you most do lack. So shall you become attuned to the task in hand and strengthened to its accomplishment. Be not unready, nor overawed too much by his glory. He brings it for you. He himself has no such need. It is for you he comes all glorious, and the beams of his radiance are for you. Bathe you in them, therefore, and appropriate to your use what strength and ennoblement they carry in their magnetic forces. Now make for yourselves small companies for friendly conversation. Speak to one to another of what I have said to you. My words to you have been few. Make you them into many. and where you are stuck. These my companions will help you to resolve your difficulty. So shall you be at ease when he shortly comes, and, while he passes, you, seeing and hearing and feeling, shall also understand. Then we did as he had bidden us, and those who had inhabited the palm crown while he spoke did not fade away into invisibility from which they had emerged. No, they descended amongst us, going where their aid was needed, and great was the peace they brought to us, so that when the Christ passed by we were not found unready. We were able to absorb into ourselves of the wonderful river of the waters of the life which bathed us to our baptism of his inner counsel and purpose. This was the last of those assemblies before he came. When it was over we knew we were one with him, and so in quietness and content we awaited his good pleasure. Arnold. And the next headline is, The Passing of the Christ. Tuesday, March 11, 1919. We were gathered together among the highlands of the Sphere 10. A solitary place it was, and with very few habitations. What buildings were there were occupied for the most part with the coordinating work of the great central tower, where outlook was kept over wide regions continually. This, of course, was before you became a dweller in the temple of which you have told me? Yes, my son. It was late in his progress that we met with him as he descended. At that time I had been advanced to the Sphere 10, of which I had now been inhabitant for a considerable period. Here was I when he reached the boundary of that region. We watched the mountain range in the far distance. The light upon it was crystal bright, and in hue green golden. Then it began to change, and the green in it gave place to rosy pink, like a red rose seen through amber. This deepened in its luster until the whole range flamed red gold, with waves of light rolling over it as the retinue moved here and there in their progress forward. Then we began to see their forms as they came toward us. They were outlined against the cloud of light in which the Christ himself moved onward. They were very glorious and of mighty stature, as of strength to match. Men and women they were, and one here and there was a dual angel toying one. I leave it there, you would not understand that mystery, nor could I put it into words for you. 3. They were neither bisexed nor sexless. Let it rest there. They were very lovely to see, but of softer mien than the men and more queenly than the women their companions. So, this company passed forward, therefore, into the condition of our state and filled the whole firmament with their light and glory. They did not descend among us, these. They hovered above, dropping upon us of the dew of their sweetness and peace, so light as kisses wafted to us on a summer breeze, but full of power, and charged with the understanding of mysteries very deep and holy. As these tokens of their love fell upon us we became enlightened in matters previously beyond our range, and so were made more competent for our work. Some took up their stations on the highest of the peaks where few of our sphere were able to ascend, the atmosphere at those elevations being too rarefied for endurance, and none were there at that time. The newcomers took their stand in groups, one here, another far away upon another peak, and so on, till a circle was made of the whole vast region, with groups in between where some mountains had place within their circumference. So they called in music one to another, both instrumental and vocal, till the sky vibrated with their harmony. Nor was that music without its effect upon us, for to what had been given to us by their peers these added a sweetness all their own, as a mother coos her babe, already resting, into rest still more profound. Eventually the horizon deepened to crimson gold, and yet the gold was primary and the crimson interspersed. And we knew the Christ was at our gates. He came. How shall I tell you how he came, more of the glory of his presence? As I try to do so, my son, I pause in fear. For to bid the court fool display the progress to the crowning of his liege prince, to show with his cap the crown how it sat upon the royal head, with his staff how the scepter was held in rest, and to shake his bells for the music of the choir, well, my son, that would be to be irreverent to the king. And that is how I feel to be about my business now. And yet, if that poor fool should love his royal master very well, he would do what in him lay to show both how the king had deported himself before his people, and also he would be curious to certify them of the unworthiness of his parody, lacking skill of play acting, and of material for the play. So do I now, and he who keeps the eagle for high heaven and the sparrow for the hedgerow will accept my little flight and twitter, as they are offered in humility and with good intent. His surrounding radiance increased in its brightness and expansion until we were all enveloped within it. I could see my companions even to the farthest bounds quite clearly. But all the air was tinted rosy gold. Our bodies also were bathed in its liquid flood. So he enveloped us whole and individually. It was within his presence and personality we stood, and we did not feel it but him in and around us. We were in, and part of, the Christ. And yet, although he thus became universal to us, he did not avoid appearing in outer form. I saw him as he moved about, above and among us. It is very hard to tell you. He seemed to be everywhere at one time in his bodily, localized form, and yet there was but one of him. I cannot say it better, and it is not very well said, for sure. So he appeared to us. I doubt that he was not seen in detail of character by each one of us identically. To me he appeared as I will tell you. He was very large of stature, some 2 men high. But he did not seem so. To say giant would be to give the wrong idea totally. He was just man, but man ennobled in aspect as in build very well. Then upon his head he wore a crown, just a broad band of continuous blending with ruby and gold alternately. Their rays were not intermingled, but the ruby rays were red and the gold rays were golden. These went upward, ever expanding, into the heavens and were caught upon the robes of those who hovered there, which became much beautified by them. His body shone naked, and yet not unclothed, which is a paradox. I mean to say that the glory which his body emitted went into every part of the region and bathed all in its glow. And yet some seemed to be reflected back when it beat upon the screen of our reverence, so that it, returning, enveloped him in our own responsive love, like golden armor upon his form. Now that was very sweet, both to us and to him. To us he did not scruple to surrender the sanctuary of his native beauty. And we took up the only robe worthy of the service and laid it in reverence upon him, eyes aground, and loved him to heartbreaking for his sweet confidence with all the exquisite tenor of our fond and worshipful love. But we had seen his glory and we knew his power suppressed within and ready. So, although he wore no armor, he went clad in golden mail, our offering to him. Of his own, as all is his, we returned to him our presentation. His feet were bare, for what we gave him fell short by that which we had absorbed into ourselves. So the robe lacked by that much in length and stayed around his ankles. His face was very solemn and pitiful, as he went first to one company and then to another, and yet never seemed to leave that central place where first we beheld him in visible form. We could read his countenance like an unrolled script. The solemnity in it came from realms ineffable where sin is not unknown but known only as a fact and not as an experience. The pity came from Calvary. And the two meeting midway between were caught in the hand of the Son of Man Divine who, raising his hand to shade his eyes that he might look into those far higher realms to see what they would do with man for his sinfulness, let fall upon his brow those drops of sin from earth to shadow his face into greater beauty. So was sublime solemnity and sorrow blent into one, and pity emerged the offspring born, henceforth to be an attribute of divinity. Then there was love, not that which delights to give or take, but love which into its bosom gathers all, and becomes one with all, identical. So did he envelop us and gather us into himself at that time. Majesty also sat upon his head, a majesty which makes a constellation into a bracelet for armwear, and sets in his signet a sun with planets attendant encircling. So he came, and so he appeared at his coming. That coming passed, but he remained in presence still. We do not see him today as we saw him then, and yet we can re-visualize that scene and substantiate it whenever we will. This also is a mystery. Let me put it thus. He passed on earthward, but the train of his cloak lengthened as he went and covered with its light all those spheres through which he passed. He went on still descending, descending, down towards that awful hell of noxious vapor about your earth, and we who had seen that shade of pity upon the majesty of his face found in our hearts to pity him too, and yet to admire and worship him. for awful as it was to him in his spotless purity of holiness to look upon that horror there below, yet he paused not nor shrank from what he had taken in hand. Calm and invincible he approached the conflict for the purification of the world, and we knew that in him we should prevail. No such leader ever was so great as he, my son. He is captain thoroughly, and not the less because there is very much of motherhood in his heart. Arnold. And next headline is. 1. It would appear that at least some of energetic problems facing the Earth were the output of the denizens of the hells. Sadly, however, many of Earth's citizens are not much different spiritually, and will end up there, after death. It is small wonder that the spiritual atmosphere around the Earth became so polluted. This chapter does tend to convey a sense of war between good and evil. The only other book in which I have also found that concept was specifically about the astral plane, and was also during the war. This is A Subaltern in Spirit Land, a sequel to Gone West Part 1 by J.S.M. Ward. GJC 2. While I would certainly support the sentiment expressed here, the Urantia book explains that Jesus is actually a creator son, and that there are some 400,000 such beings. Each unique, of course. GJC 3. I once asked a question of spirit that led to the reply that there are more orders of angels than life forms on this planet. That being the case, we should expect the unexpected. I am also aware that there are those that are visually hermaphrodites. GJC, Chapter 7, How the Heavenly Powers Dealt with Earth Science, Wednesday, March 12, 1919. 5:28–6:46 p.m. Now when the Christ passed onward, we also, now of his company, pressed after him. We were all arrayed in our several orders, but by no outward word of command. Our commission proceeded from our own hearts, wherein it was given us, by means of our own preparation, to understand exactly where lay our field of service and what was required of us there. So we at ease fell into our individual places, inspired thereto, by communion of his presence, and fell to our task. I will explain to you in brief the order of our advance earthward. As we encircled earth on every side, and all those spheres intervening, we pressed downward and inward as towards a center. This is to give it to you in terms of space, a space of three dimensions. Only so will you be able to reach some slight knowledge of the economy of this great campaign. So, the Christ himself, as I have said, was ubiquitous. He was omnipresent throughout the whole myriads of his far-flung armies in all their degrees of rank, from those his lords paramount, who held authority exceedingly great, to the humblest of us his rank and file. But although we were inspired from within as to our several duties, yet all was in perfect order of battlery externally. Those who were highest and nearest to him transmitted his commands, through those next in rank to the officers below themselves, who transmitted them to others of lesser degree in due sequence. We received our guidance from those who, being nearest above us in estate, were also visible to our sight continually. We were able as we proceeded on our way to visualize those of some 3 degrees superior, but received our orders, except on occasion, from those of 1 degree above. We of the sphere 10, therefore, followed where he led and, arriving in the sphere 9, began our operations. We exerted our pressure upon the whole circumference on every side and gradually moved inward upon it. And, as we did so, there happened within that sphere some similar experience as had come already to us when he and his retinue pressed into our own sphere. So we gave of our higher condition to that realm and, as we passed through it, strained out some of its weakness, and some we transmuted into soundness of strength. Thus did we and passed onward to the sphere 8. But, this gained, we in turn became to those of the sphere 9 who followed us as those of the sphere 11 had become to us. They looked to us now for our guidance and followed us into the sphere 8, which traversed, they also accepted from us our transmitted orders, handed them on to those who followed them, in due order of array into the sphere 7 next in order below. So did this process continue until we had come within 3 spheres of earth. We had gathered up our armies of the heavens, one by one, and numbered them with our myriads. But here we paused. These are 3 spheres nearest Earth, were treated more or less as one region, for here the vapor of Earth's hell soup was thick about us, and here it is the great Armageddon must needs be fought. It was these three spheres which formed our battleground, and here we accepted the attack from the enemy. You of Earth went on your ways and only very able to penetrate through the gloom surrounding you in those regions of spirit which closed around you. But gradually we progressed until you began to hear rumors that our coming had been sensed by some and by others certain of our advance guard had been sighted. Many laughed at those reports,